We're going to now start Shir 5, the series of Tchilas Bizmanenu, the final Shir. In our previous Shir, we dealt with the proofs, proving that the Murex Trunculus is the correct source of Tchilas. Now we're going to go into the questions, the frequently asked questions and the answers on the Murex Trunculus being the correct source of Tchilas. So first of all, as an introduction to the questions, we have to understand the gisha, the approach to the questions. So first of all, we have proofs which are irrefutable that the Murex Trunculus is the correct source of Tchilas. Each proof comes from a different angle. Each one stands by itself. So unless we're going to attack each proof, every proof, then we have proven that the Murex Trunculus is the correct source. So it's proven. So technically we could close up shop and go home. But we're going to now go ahead and still leave it open, leave an open table discussion to see what questions, what do we have to talk about the Murex Trunculus not being the source of Tchilas. So first of all, there's a confusion in regards to questions in general on the Tchilas, that people think every little kashala is a pircha. Every little question all of a sudden becomes like, boom, this can't be it. This can't be the right one. So I want to be mechadish to say a chiddush over here. So I mean, it might be a chiddush to some of you might know already. So hold on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a person with something called Shikul Hadas. Shikul Hadas means a person has a mind and he can weigh things. He weighs things, he makes decisions all the time based on his Shikul Hadas, weighing when he wants to do something. If he wants to cross the street, should he cross the car is coming? You know, he doesn't want to get hit by the car. So should he wait for the car to pass or can he beat it out? There's all sorts of shikul hadas that a person makes in life. Coming to asugya, a person also needs to have a shikul hadas. Now part of learning with shikul hadas means you have to look at your sides, your two sides, when you come to make a decision. So if you want to go make a decision, is or isn't the Murex Trunculus the source of tchilas? So the question is, what's the shikul? So what we have so far on one side is five irrefutable proofs that the Murex Trunculus is the correct source of tchilas. Now what's on the other side? You have to be shekelet. It just doesn't mean, you know, every little question is going to tip the scale. There's a Rambam in Mari Nevuchim which stresses the point. I think it's kedai for everyone to look it up inside and go through it. It's a very important idea that he says in regards to learning. In general, learning with Shikul Hadas. So now we spoke about it in the first year. Back to our story with the Mr. Stern from Sanhedrin Rechevet. Again, just to say it over again for those that don't remember, we had a case of Reuven and Shimon having the discussion. Reuven tells Shimon that, do you know Mr. Stern? Shimon tells Reuven, I know of him, Mr. Stern, and he gives the simanim. He says he's 6 feet tall, he's gingy, he learns in the mirror, he has a wife that works in medical billing, he has 4 boys and 2 girls, and he drives a black car. And the other person says, No, it can't be the same person. Why? Because this Mr. Stern lives in Sanhedrin Rechevet, is gingy, 6 feet, learns in the mirror, has a wife in medical billing, has 4 boys and 2 girls, but he drives a gray car. So it can't be. So what's our shikul? What's the proper shikul hadas over here? On the one hand, you have all these simanim on one side of the scale saying it's the same person. And you have one thing, one point on the other side of the scale saying he says it's black, he says it's gray. On the other side of the scale. So what's going to outweigh? What's the proper shikul hadas? So the proper shikul hadas, everybody would agree, would say, of course it's the same one. And you have to answer up. How are you going to answer up? You might have to stretch a little bit. black, it was really dark gray, and he said black, and he calls it gray, or he had one of them sorong, or whatever it is, you're going to answer it. The question is not going to affect the proof. So what do we, let's understand, what requires a good question in Shikul Hadas? What would we put on the scale that would weigh against the proofs that we have brought, that the Mirik Strenkulis is the correct status? So in order for anything, any kasha, to be a kasha on a proof, it has to be on equal level as the proof. That means two things. It needs to be founded, have basis, the same level of basis as the proof. And number two, it needs to be clear. It has to have the same level of clarity as the proof. Okay? Those are two things that a question, in order to be on equal level, needs to have. And unless you have that, unless you have questions which are on equal levels of the proof, so it's like going to war, fighting against a tank using a slingshot. You can shoot as many pebbles as you want at the tank, it's not going to make a dent. So we're going to go through five types of questions that you could ask on, let's say, the Murex Tranquilus. The first one is, we'll call it level one proof, which is the founded, a solid question. What will be a solid question? Something which is on the same level of clarity and the same mevusa, same basis as the proof. So for example, we've proved it with solidly founded from Bavli proofs, along with very, very clear proofs. So a question would be, if let's say we were to find a Gemara in Bavli that would say like this, Tana Rabbanan, Simanei Chilazayin, Sheyosh Lai Arba Raglayim V'Knafayim. If we would have such a Gemara, that would be a kasha, equivalent on the same level as the proofs. It's a Bavli, so Mela, it's the same, it's a Chazal, it's a solid chazal, and it's very clear. We know what harba raglaya means, and we know what knafaya means. And that wouldn't match with the murex. That would be. It's a hypothetical gemara. There is no such gemara. But hypothetically speaking, that would be a clear question, which you would have to deal with. That would go onto the scale. Yes, you have six proofs, you know, from Chazal, on one side that the Murex is the correct source of Tcheles. At the same time, you have a Chazal, which clearly counteracts that on the other side of the scale. So that would be a Shikul Hadas question. However, if it's not solid, like this, it's not, it doesn't have the same basis, or it doesn't have the same clarity, then it's not going to go on the scale against the proofs. It's not an equal level. Now we're going to give an example of a not solidly based Masechtas Tzitzis, and one of the Masechtas Ketanis, says like this. It brings down exactly the same Gemara as our Gemara in Menaches, of Tan Rabbanon, Chilazim Doime, Gufo Doime Leyam, Briyase Doime Ledag, Oila Achas, Lishivim Shono, Umidome Tavim Tcheles, Fiyotam Yukarin. The Masechtas Tzitzis says it has a different Gersa. It says over there, Chilazim Zeh, Gufo Doime Lerakia, Priyasidem le dag, oila achas le sheva shonim, umidome seven trelas. So now, that's a question. How is the Murex Daimel Rakia? But that is a question which doesn't have found basis, because we know that Masechtas Ketanis and Masechtas Tzitzis included are infamous for Girsois mistakes. And as you can see in the Braisa itself, it has another Girsa mistake, Sheva Shanim instead of Shivim Shana. And you'll say, maybe the Masechtas is right as opposed to the Bavli. But in our Shikul, we know that the Bavli is way, way more Mivusas and much, much more Kisve Yad than the Masechtas Ketanis. The Bavli is much more Muga than the Masechtas Ketanis. So therefore, the kasha from the Masechtas Ketanis, so the pashtus is that the Masechtas Ketanis is a girsa mistake. We find that there's a similar girsa mistake in the Rambam. And there's a Sefer HaMuga on the Rambam, which the Rambam gave his sign of approval to change the, that this is the correct Girsa. And you see the Frankel Rambam changes it. So we see that there's already this printing mistake. This was a mistake already reckoned with. If you look in Ayush al Tchilas, there's a paragraph on it. I quoted it in one of the Ma'amar Kaimis. He goes through this. So you see the Kasha from the Masech Tzitzis is a clear question, but it's not a Mevusas question. It doesn't have the basis, the same basis as the proofs. It's not on the same level basis as the proofs, because you could say that because it's not the same as having a Bavli. Having a Masech Tzitzis, a Girsa from Masech Tzitzis, is not the same level as having a Girsa from a Bavli. The next example would be questions which are mevusas, they have the same level of basis, but they don't have the same level of clarity. I don't have exactly a dogma of something which is mevusas, which is against the murex, but we'll quote a Yerushalmi, which some people use it as against the murex, and we'll see that Saker seems more like it's mashma, that it is like that the murex is the right one. The Yerushalmi says like this, that the Yerushalmi is dealing with the Yerushalmi is dealing with whether a person is chayiv if he kills a kina on Shabbos. So the Yerushalmi is a meira that says, Omer of Shimon ben Chalafto, v'loy mechilazin shemanu. Don't we learn from a chilazin? They would kill the chilazin. V'chilazayin yesh like gidim v'atzamais? Does a chilazayin have gidim v'atzamais? Does it have sinews and bone? So, and therefore, and by chilazayin, we know that they trapped it. We know that they killed it to get it out on Shabbos. And there should be a malacha of shechita on it. So too, by the kino also, there should be harigas kino on Shabbos. The same way that chilazayin doesn't have gidim v'atzamais. So to a kina also doesn't have a kina, in some sense should be chayev in harig a kina. V'loichein tani, then the Yerushalmi continues, V'loichein tani, v'chol davar she'ein loy gidim v'atzamais, ein echai yoysim ishish ha'chadashim. But doesn't something that lives more than 6 months, something which doesn't have gidim v'atzamais, can't live more than 6 months. So what is that saying? Does that mean, so the Zwamshad is, so Amela, the way the Karbonet and Pneuma should learn, is that the Chilazayin doesn't live more than 6 months, and therefore, it doesn't have Gidim at Samais, and therefore be Daimer Ta'akina. The Gilyan Ashas learns, V'lechein Tani means that it lives more than 6 months, so therefore it has Gidim at Samais. So therefore, you would only be chayiv shechita on the chilazin and not on the kina. But bottom line, the question is from the Yerushalmi, is people want to ask from the Yerushalmi, you see that the chilazin has gidim v'atzamais. Now again, it's a little confusing question because Mimonoshach, first of all, according to the Gilyan Ashas that comes out at the end, that gidim v'atzamais, that a chilazin has gidim v'atzamais, because it lives more than 6 months. The murex lives more than 6 months, so it has to have gidim v'atzamais also. According to the, if you want to say that the murex doesn't have gidim v'atzamais, then you're going with the karbonet and the pnei maisha. Then you ask the question: has it lived more than 6 months? In other words, the bottom line: the Yerushalmi itself is unclear. You can't ask a question from Yerushalmi that says that it has gidim v'atzamais because it's very unclear how to read it, and Mamanoshach, it's not really going to work out with the Yerushalmi if you're going to say that the chilazin needs to have gidim v'atzamais but doesn't, because the Yerushalmi himself says that it needs to live more than 6 months. If it's going to live more than 6 months, then it will have gidim v'atzamais. So what's the answer? The answer is that we have to question ourselves, what does it mean gidim v'atzamais? So it's not going to be gidim v'atzamais like we know of our bones and our sinews, right? Because the chilazin doesn't have that, and it's still living more than 6 months. So elamai, gidim v'atzamais, it could live like 3 years, even more. So the Gidim, so what is the Gidim at Samais?
Raise them?
The what?
Could they grow them? Could they raise
they
them?
They could raise them, but they don't really. But they, and people have it in fish tanks, but as a, they don't farm them yet. I think there's a project underway to have them farmed. So where's the Gidim at Samais in the Murex? So the Murex has a Gid which connects the snail to the shell, and that some etzem you can understand to mean the shell. The shell is hard like an etzem, and the gid is what connects the body, the worm part, to the shell. See, as gidim atzamais. That's what we have to say, and then we can understand the Yishalmi, because the Yishalmi is a chera question. Like, what was the havamina? Like, in the beginning, we thought that chilazain doesn't have gidim atzamais, and according to the Gilyan Hashas, the answer is that it has gidim atzamais. Right? So what was the havamina? Just look at it. Does it have or doesn't it have? So if you understand that the Gidim HaTzamis is not the simple Gidim HaTzamis, like a bone and sinews inside. It's outside. It's the shell and the this Gid that connects it. So that's the Havina was that wasn't called the Gidim HaTzamis. The Maskana was that was called Gidim HaTzamis. An example for a question which is lack of clarity. A question which is lack of clarity. I like to say this other question. It's going to sound funny. It's going to sound like a funny question. But people ask this. A lot of people ask this question. They take one of the big rayas to the Murex and they flip it around and want to use it as a disproof. They want to say that it's too good of a raya. What do I mean? One of the proofs that we spoke about, that the Murex is the correct source of Tcheles, is that the Gemara says, we see from the Gemara, that Tcheles is a dye which is identical to indigo. It's exactly the same color as indigo, that it's impossible for a human being to tell the difference between the two, if not for a chemical test. That's the only way to tell the difference between the two of them. And we said that it's so similar that it's even exactly the same chemical makeup. The same structure. It's carbon 16, hydrogen 10, nitrogen 2, oxygen 2. And it's exactly the same. So the question they ask is, that's the biggest proof that it can't be the Murex. Why? Because then how can you test the difference between with a chemical test? It's exactly the same. That's the big question. It's a funny question. You know, too good of a raya. But the answer is, first of all, anybody who tells you that they tried the chemical test, regardless of whether they say it passed, it failed, it's fake news. Nobody is ever able to do this Gemara's chemical test. It's impossible. You need to have the old fabrics that they had then, with the old dyes. You have to know the quantity of what we're doing. The Gemara doesn't say how much of each one. Any chemist knows that one of the basic necessary ideas that a person needs to know when they do a chemical test is how much of each one of the ingredients that you're using is. So I'd like to speak about first, this is not our point, it's not the point I wanted to discuss, but first I want to deal with, on a scientific level, it's not true. There are differences. The indigo has indirubin in it, that the Murex snail does not. The Murex has bromine in it, in small amounts, but it has bromine in it, and the indigo doesn't. So there are differences between the two. That's first of all. The second point is that I've heard it being mentioned that people have a hypothesis that the Gemara's chemical test is a reduction. It's a reduction test. It's basically, what it's doing is, it's reversing the original reduction. Like we said before, that when a dye comes out of the Murex, you can't dye with it. It's in a certain form that it needs to be reduced into that clear liquid, that blue, that yellow-green liquid. Then you dye fabric inside, and you put the fabric inside, and then it's able to attach itself to the fabric, and then when you take it out, it oxidizes back to that blue or purple, whichever you're dyeing. And now it's connected to the fabric. So people want to say that this Gemara's chemical test is a reduction again. It's a reverse reduction. It's basically putting the wool back inside the vat and re-reducing the dye back to its soluble form, that it comes off, and that was the Gemara's chemical test. I'd like to battle the hypothesis with the hypothesis. This whole thing is a hypothesis based on the fact that the Gemara's chemicals mention in one time urine, the other time sa'ar, which things that could reduce. So the Gemara's urine, let's say for example, the Gemara's urine reduction. So we're trying to do a urine reduction. So now, every time you dye, reduce dye, let's say you reduce indigo or you reduce murex dye, if you reduce it with different reducing agents, it has different effects. The effect of urine, reducing with urine, would be different than reducing it with other agents, other reduction agents. So therefore, if you wanted to do a reverse reduction on something that was originally reduced with urine, would come out very different than doing a reduction on something that was originally reduced with something else. Now let's try something. So let's see, where was urine used as a reduction agent? Urine, we do not find anywhere that urine was used as a reduction agent from murex dye. It mentions urine in terms of getting alkaline. As we spoke, the reduction process needs to be an alkaline procedure. So you used to add certain chemicals to make a strong alkaline base. And they use urine to be also an alkaline. But because the materials that they used for alkaline, like lime and stuff, would be too strong, so they would add urine to it, putrid urine, to sort of neutralize the strength of the alkaline, while still producing alkaline. So that's what urine was used for, but it was not used as a reduction agent. It wasn't powerful enough to reduce the murex dye. And so where was urine used? Urine was used to reduce indigo. Using urine for indigo was used primarily for small-scale dyeing or home dyeing, domestic dyeing. It was especially because urine is a material which is readily accessible, and it's actually a very simple process to do. And they didn't need to use alkaline substance for it to reduce the indigo in the reduction process of the indigo, because the urine would produce the alkaline. So that was something that was used for home dyers, for small-scale dyeing. But that was used for indigo, not for murex dyes. If you look at Zohar Amar's book Haragaman, so he speaks about trying to figure out what they did use to reduce murex dyes, and it seems that they used the murex snails, the pieces of rotten murex snails, that would supply the bacteria to reduce the murex dye. So, and that would be a reducing agent, which they would not use to reduce indigo. So again, so if the Gemara's test was a reduction test to reverse the original reduction form, so it would make a lot of sense that if you were reducing indigo, so the reduction process would have been originally, would could be a, the original reduction could have been a urine reduction. Could be as likely to be a urine reduction. And it makes sense that it would be from a reduction of urine, because we're dealing with cheats over here. People talking about treles, somebody brought wool which was officially dyed treles, l'shem treles, l'shem tzitzis. So evidently we're talking about a cheat over here. Somebody is trying to cheat. And if somebody is trying to cheat, we're talking about usually home people, domestic people who are, let's say their primary job is to either dye treles and they ran out, so they decide to do a quick indigo dye, or we're talking about scammers, people who are seichrim. They sell tcheles, so they're not official dyers. So they're gonna what? They're gonna, if they want to go sell a cheap imitation, they'll go ahead and make a home indigo. So what would they use? They would use urine to reduce it, or they would use sa'ar to reduce it. These materials which are natural, found at home, and that was easily accessible. So the test of fakert, I think it will work very nicely with this hypothesis that the Gemara's chemical test is a reduction test. It worked beautiful. For indigo, it worked because it was originally reduced in that way, whereas murex was made differently, so it didn't work on murex. But that's not the point what I wanted to say. The point that I want to say is that the kasha is an invalid question. The entire question is based on a hashara ba'alma. I think that since it's the same chemical compound, so mela must be that the Gemara's chemical test can't make a difference. It's a scientific hashara. We don't know. Now I'd like to quote something from Professor Cardin in her book Natural Dyes. Again, Professor Cardin is a world expert in natural dyes. Again, she's gone through hundreds of natural dyes in her book, and that's her life's mission, is analyzing and studying, researching natural dyes. So if there's anybody who knows about natural dyes, it's going to be her. And I'll read a couple of passages on what she says. On page one of her book, strangely, although humankind can today travel in space and has penetrated the secret of the atom and the genome, there still remains much interdisciplinary work to be done to find securely grounded scientific explanations for the processes whereby a colorant extracted from a plant, a fungus, a mollusk, or an insect becomes attached to a particular textile fiber. Okay? Got it? The scientists don't know. The sikkum of this paragraph was that man-made dyeing, we know a lot about. Natural dyeing, we don't. Again, then she writes on page 4 about vat dyes, indigo and shellfish purple. Then she goes through an explanation of what a vat dye is. And then again, she writes, in this case too, the exact nature of the bonds formed between these vat dyes and both plant and animal fibers is still a matter for conjecture. You see from here that scientists do not know the details about what goes on in natural dyeing. It's something, yes, we trust scientists to measure from here to the moon. You know, we trust scientists, like the Rambam says in Kiddush HaChodesh, if there are clear-cut facts that are irrefutable, then we can go with what the scientist says. Hasharis of the scientists, we do not go with. And she is saying that how murex dye and indigo dye connect to fibers, the reduction process, we don't understand how it happens. We might know a little bit here and there, but it's not understood. It's a matter of conjecture. It's svaris, it's hasharis. So you can't ask a question from there. You can't ask a question. So again, this is a question which is an invalid question because of lack of clarity. This is a story with the Panovitcher Rav. At the Panovitcher Rav, went to a certain place. I'm not going to say which place, but he was collecting money for Panovich. And he wanted to speak there on Shabbos, and the shul didn't let him speak on Shabbos, didn't let him speak. He said that we have a policy in the shul, we don't have any collectors speaking in our shul. He said he was explaining the difference between a watchman and a watchdog. A watchman lets, if he sees somebody chashev coming in, he knows to let him in. If he sees somebody who shouldn't be coming in, He stops them from not coming in. A watchdog is someone who just doesn't let anybody in. He's not mechalek. No difference. Doesn't differentiate. He said, yeah, there's a difference between a yeshiva, collecting for yeshiva, and collecting for other things. Up until now, I understood that there were three types of people. There are people who don't have a shomer at all, that they bring in from science the facts and the hasharis, and they don't stop anything from coming in. Then you have people who have watchmen, that they stop the hasharis and they only take in the facts, that like the Rambam in Kiddush HaChodesh says. And then you have people who have watchdogs, that they don't take in anything. They don't take in hasharis, they don't take in facts, nothing from the scientists. Everything from the scientists is off limits. But now with Neschadish, something new. You have a watchman who only lets in the hasharis and doesn't let in the facts. I think this question is a siman mavuk that the anti-trelis people are grasping at straws to try to go get to throw over the murex. So far we spoke about the first three types of questions. Questions which are solid, questions which are not solid, questions which are lacking in clarity, those questions that don't have a solid basis, questions that are lacking in clarity. And now we're up to the fourth type of question, which is ha'aris, a nice ha'aris. Okay, it's not a question. It's a question. You know, it's a ha'ara. Like, for example, like people ask, like, why is it called dam chilazin? Why isn't it called rear chilazin? Okay, nice ha'ara. We'll talk about it. When do you call something dam? When do you call it rear? You know, if murex is, yes, if murex, it's not the blood of, it's not his life blood, so why do you call it dam? It should be called rear. Okay, nice question. So let's discuss it. So the very nice answer is rear is something which flows out of the body. It's something like something that comes out from the nose. It's like something that drizzles out. Whereas dam is something which is a liquid, which is encapsulated in the blood. Nice answer. Question as a question against the murex. Not a question. It's not a disproof to the murex. You got to put things into perspective. Like another ha'ara is, why does Rashi call the chilazin a toilas? Why doesn't he call it a chaymet? We have a word for sniya. We have a chaymet. Nice question. You know, we can talk about it. We can discuss it. Think of an answer. You don't think of an answer. Say that. It's not a kasha on the murex. It's a ha'ara.
Rabbeinu Tam,
yes, Rabbeinu.
That is rear,
from
the definition.
Oh, right, right. So the point is that what type of question is it at all that it should be called, that you should call anything which is not the lifeblood rear, because Rabbeinu Tam himself says that the dam chilazin is something which is mifkar pakid, that means that it's not his lifeblood, and we're still calling it dam. So the whole question doesn't even. What?
Dama Isha is also not the place in the world we talk about the pocket of Dama Isha.
Right.
And also still it's not Dam Khayyasim,
but it's part of the Dam Khayyasim. Right. But in Eid also you find Yarkus, you find Dam different colours which Lahadya aren't the chilek of the aren't real Dam. Yeah, but that's true. Even by Nida you find Dam which is not real Dam, but it's called Dam. We find this use. But anyways, yeah, but like you pointed out, it's a nice ha'ara. You want to discuss it, you can discuss it. You come up with an answer, you know. There's some good answers. You know, here, as you pointed out, it's not even a question. Right? You say it's a question on Taisus. You're asking a question on Taisus. Another type of ha'ara that people ask is, like, how do you have Tzeda according to the Taisus Rid in Chagiga? The Taisus Rid in Chagiga says that there's no Tzeda on slow-moving creatures. So Mela, if you have so the murex is a slow-moving creature, so it has tzeda on it, according to the Tesis Rit. Even though most of the Rishayim hold that there is tzeda on slow-moving creatures, Rashi considers the slow-moving. Rashi counts chaymet as one of the Shemayin HaShratzim, and the chaymet is slow-moving, and that's what the Tesis Rit is going on. he's been chaylik on Rashi and a lot of the other Rishayim who learned that chaymet is one of the Shmoyer Shvatzim which you're chayiv on Seidon. Yeah, I'm sorry. Chaymet means the chaymet that we know of. The chaymet, the pasuk says chaymet, and Rashi and many Rishayim understand that to mean a snail. And the Tosfos Reed asks on Rashi and these Rishayim that how could it be a snail that's slow moving so there wouldn't be tzed on it? So he learns that chaymet is something else. So people ask, according to the Tosfos Reed, how could if there's no tzed on a snail, so how you have tzed? How you chayim mishum tzed on somebody's tzad chilazin? Ha'ara, nice ha'ara. So you talk and learning, shmuz and learning about it. According to the Tosfos, what will the Tosfos Reed do about this Gemara? So you say, very nice. Chilak, because if it's under the water, so then you need to have, and you need techniques to go trap it. Like the Gemara in Beitza says, what's considered tzeda? Hava metzuda nitzudenu, get the traps and trap it. So that's called tzeda. So, and for the murex, since it's under the water and you can't get to it, put down the nets on the bottom with the bait, and the snails crawl onto the bait, and then you hoist them up. So you need to do a tzeda. Another point just to bring out is that this whole idea of slow moving is slow moving in relation to people. What does that mean? That means you could get it b'shchiachas, with one jump. Right? If you have an ant crawling on the floor, there's no tzeda on it, lefi d'tosfos Reed, because you could just run over there and get it in one swoop. Right? So if something's on the bottom of the ocean and I can't get to it in one swoop, so if I had a race with it, I'm starting at the banks of the water and we have a race, me and the snail, to get to England. Right, straight to England. The snail will beat me out because I'm stuck by the water. I'm never going to be able to... I can never reach the snail. He's always going to outrun me. So the whole concept of Shchiya Achas doesn't apply to things that I can't... That are in the water, on the bottom of the ocean, I can't get to. I can't get to him. Okay. Again, the point is, the question is a hard question, and you have to deal it with as such. There's a big trap that I see in the anti-tzedes world. There's a major trap that people get caught up in forgetting the Shikul Hadas. They all of a sudden start handling these haris, and all of a sudden they lose sight of the bigger picture, and they get caught up in the nitty-gritty, and like they turn a ha'ara all of a sudden like a hot air balloon just like puffs up. It's like this major proof, anti-murex proof, when it's nothing except a little ha'ara. As if like we never had a question before in Shas. And then we have the fifth type, which are the practical questions, which is no connection to our sugya. It's like shopping for an esrog, and you have a shayla. How many chutim to wear? We'll get to some of these questions, like what are you going to do? Like how many chutim are you going to wear? Are you going to do like Rambam, like Ravid, like Taisif, and maybe it's Bal Taisif, and what are you going to do? Okay, so it's like a shayla. You go to your rav when you have an esrog, like you're trying to pick out an esrog, so you try to figure out which is the best esrog that you can get, or whatever it is. We'll deal with it later, but that's not really, doesn't have anything to do with the Murex B'chal. But in Mitzvah, we'll get to it. So basically, the only type of question that we're concerned to address that should go on the Mishkal is the first level, the solid questions. But again, the chances of that happening, of getting such a question, is 0.00000000001% chance of finding such a question popping up. Like we said in the first group, because what's going to happen? If you're going to have such a question coming up, a solid question, right? That's mamash mev, like Tana Rabbana, Simon Echelazin, Sheish Le'abar Raglayim. To get such a question would mean to say is that we found the wrong species. And b'mikra, this murex happened to match up with all the different simanim that it gave. And for that to happen is again a 0.00000000001% chance. So to go ahead, so I'm not concerned. I think if we find another 1,000 Maimari Chazal and Chilazin, we don't have to be worried about even one of them being a solid proof against the Murex.